All right, Jim Taylor back on WMJ and WMJ.com on this Saturday. Pleased to have an in-studio guest with us, and he had to travel through a snowstorm on U.S. Route 67, our good friend Larry Schulte. Good morning, sir. Give us a road report. How were they today?
Okay, Highway 67, a little shaky. The 17 was in great shape, so the Merco boys are doing their job.
Okay, so it's 10 minutes from Biola to Aledo on the Route 17 interchange. All right, you got a job with our traffic report. I tweeted out a picture the other day. We were talking about Greg Popovich working with the late great Craig Kelly, who's passed away a little over a year ago, an Aledo coach back in the 1970s, a teacher. And he was born and raised in Gary, Indiana, where Greg Popovich grew up at. And they maintained a close friendship, and Greg Popovich would work basketball camps in Aledo. And the camp counselors were Craig Kelly, Larry Schulte, and Greg Popovich. And I always kid Craig Kelly's daughter, Heidi Hess, her daughter played on the Mercer County team with my daughter. And I said, I always look at that camp counselor brochure, and there's bigger paragraphs about Coach Schulte and Coach Kelly than there are Greg Popovich, right? But take us back to those days. That had to be a pretty neat experience.
The IHSA rules at that time, you could go coach other schools' teams in the summertime in a camp situation, but you could not work with your own kids. Now, what a ridiculous rule that was. Anyway, Craig and I had a good relationship, and he asked me to come over and work his camp, and I met Coach Popovich, who was at that time an assistant coach at the Air Force Academy, and one of the funniest guys I had ever been around. I suppose the media probably, they don't say that, but he was just hilarious.
But his sarcasm to the media, I think, is still pretty funny, though.
You know, now I understand he's a wine connoisseur. At that time, believe me, he was a beer connoisseur, and we at Craig Kelly's house, we did our share.
Yeah. So you started your coaching and teaching career at Sherrard, right?
Correct.
So take us back to those eras, because I think I was on your Facebook page a couple days ago, and I saw some of the old school pictures that you had posted there. How vividly do you remember those days? And I assume pretty vividly, because that's where you got your start at.
Right. I in 1965, I became the junior high coach at Sherrard. Was the junior high coach there for 3 years, left 1 year, went to Bishop McNamara in Kankakee, and then as the freshman coach, and then came back to Sherrard for this big pay increase as the sophomore coach. And Bob Jackson was the head coach at that time, the late Bob Jackson, sure. A great man, was my mentor, and I was his sophomore coach for, I think, 3 years, and then when he retired, became full-time athletic director, I became the head coach at Sherrard and was in that position for 6 years. And we had some really quality coaches at Sherrard at that time. I think we have Vic Boblett, Mike Tracy, Wayne DeSutter, all in the Football Coaches Hall of Fame for the state of Illinois. Dennis Cromer, myself are in the Basketball Coaches Hall of Fame. So we really, we had Joel Brunswold, the late Joe Brunswold was also a coach there. So we really had some quality coaches in a small school situation.
Man, that's a who's who.
Yeah, wow.
Did you coach anything else there at Sherrard besides basketball?
When I was a junior high coach, I coached all three sports because my starting pay of $5,400 a year was supplemented by $100 for each one of those three
that
sports.
What it was?
So I coached football and track as well as basketball.
How vividly do you remember the first game you ever coached?
Extremely well. It was in the against the Andover Blue Racers. In the gym at Andover, where the center court lines.
Well, you never get any call.
We didn't get any call there, but we won. My first year of coaching, I really thought I probably had all the answers. As a coach, you always remember the defeats, the tough losses. I can't remember a lot of the wins, but I can remember all the tough losses. My toughest loss was my first year of coaching. We were 15-0. And we were playing in the conference tournament in Aledo, and we get beat by Aledo at a shot at the buzzer, and I was absolutely devastated, and that loss has stuck with me ever since. That was a tough one.
That would have been what, your 60?
That was 65.
Who were some of the kids like on the Sherrard team then, you remember?
Yeah, I had Jeff Dawson, Steve Slavish, Henry Johnston, Albert Hampton. Those are some of the names.
Wow. Well, and you bring up a good point about, like, coaching development. You know, when you first start about, you think you have all the answers. But when did you realize, like, this is, what is the term, continuing education? And the good coaches, I think, in my opinion, their continuing education continues through their final season of coaching. I mean, is that true?
It never stops. I could never understand young coaches that didn't go to coaching clinics. I mean, my whole career, I would go to 5, 6, 7 coaching clinics a year. And, the longer you coach, you decide what kind of a system that you want to run. But you're always looking for keywords, catchphrases, better ways to communicate with your kids. And, any coach that stops doing those kinds of things stops their growth. So that never ends. And you can always pick up something that you can help implement your program or your system, no matter how long you've coached.
And the other thing, too, you know, when you talk about going to those coaching clinics, it's more than just strategy, I assume. It's, you know, when I've talked to a lot of coaches that are good at what they do, they talk about, well, it's about relationships. And it's about, you can talk all you want, but is the youngster, as John Elder would say, at the other end receiving the message? And a lot of times in the programs you see, well, you can answer that question and say, well, no. Or conversely, you can say, well, yeah, you can easily see that the message is being conveyed and received by the kid.
Well, in the modern era of coaching, and believe me, the last 10 years of my 46-year coaching career was a lot different than the first 10, because the amount of parent involvement, the amount of communication that was required with your kids, your parents, because so simply in the old days, telling kids to do things, they were willing to do it and didn't question why they were doing it. In the modern era, everything is questioned.
Well, and you know, it was funny. I can't remember if it was last year or 2 years ago, I had John Elder in here, and we were talking about the transition in coaching through different eras or different cultures. And he said, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, that he thought it kind of changed a little bit. You know, back in the day, basically it was maybe your dad going to the game, maybe your mom, right? Well, now today it's dad, mom, mm-hmm. grandma, grandpa, both sets. It's maybe one aunt, two aunts, an uncle, a brother, a sister, the whole family is there. So then you have, you know, 13 sets of eyes watching that person there to watch, cheer on, and then how the coach is vis-a-vis treating that kid in terms of playing time or whatever.
Yeah, I heard some coach at a clinic one time say, you know, each year you develop 5 friends. Those are the 5 kids that are starting. And then the next 5, they're doubtful about you and about what you're doing. And then the last 5, you've got 5 more enemies. And if you stay in coaching long enough, you just think you develop those that many enemies each year that it certainly multiplies, and then put all their families as your enemies as well. You know, and I don't think any coach goes into the thing to make enemies. And most guys that are career coaches, they love kids and they love working with kids, and they relish the relationships that they develop with their players. But so many times there's outside sources that get involved, and then kids get twisted and turned in a lot of different ways.
Well, and you look at today's environment with social media, you know, when you reflect back on your career, I think probably social media was just in the infancy stages. You know, is that, I assume that's an issue that, you know, we talk about. If I, you know, a lot of the people I talk to say, well, if I just had to show up and coach the baseball team, if I just had to show up and coach the basketball team or football team, cool, I'd do it for 40 years. But I don't have to just do that. I have to, you know, be involved in all this other periphery stuff that is beyond really coaching the game. And I think social media is probably some of that, a little bit dealing with that.
The fun part of coaching is obviously getting in the practice gym. I actually, as a coach, I always enjoyed being in the practice gym even more than I enjoyed game night, because that's when you're the teacher and, the final exam is the game, obviously. But, as you say, working with the kids directly, that's the fun part. And all the other things that you have to do in order to coach, especially if you're a high school coach, when I coached at Augustana, and I was back being an assistant again my last 6 years of my career, what fun I had, because I was the good guy, I was the assistant coach, I wasn't making the final decisions, I was just I was able to recruit, I was able to do nothing but basketball, and I was in hog heaven.
And it's funny you bring that up. We'll talk a little bit about assistant coaches and how important they are to programs, but it was funny. This is another great Elder story. He was here talking about when he was Pat's assistant at, I think, Sherrard or wherever, and they were in this conversation about some strategy decision, and John looked at Pat, his son, and said, well, you're the decision rests with you. You're the head coach. And he said, Pat looked at me and says, don't you forget it. but the other thing, I doing this since, close to 30 years now, for me, it's easy to see the good programs and people will say, yeah, by the head coach. And I say, no, it's about what they've built around them with their staff. If they, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, or whatever, it's about the staff. We talk about roster in sports, but in high school sports, to me, it's about the staff that's there with the head coach. Would you agree with that? How important are the assistant coaches, on your staff in putting a program in place?
When I coached at Allman, I think the success that we had could directly be attributed to the staff that I was able to put together. I had many assistants, and people jokingly used to refer to them as the College of Cardinals. And, I had guys helping me, like Brian Jones, who's now the head coach at the University of North Dakota, Division I, former assistant at Iowa. I had Jeff Schneider, former Major League Baseball pitcher. Kurt Johansson was the head coach at Iowa City High. He's currently the athletic director in Gunn High School in Palo Alto, California. I mean, those are the kind of guys I had on my staff, along with some others. And, my feeling was, yes, I'm going to make the final decision come game time, and I'm going to be the one that's going to be doing the talking come game time. But in practice, the more eyes that you have and the more you can break things down, and Gray did the same thing at Augustana. I mean, he always had three assistants and himself, and there was never any standing around. And if you were a JV player, you got just as many reps as any varsity player did, because we're all doing the same drills, and all the breakdowns were supervised directly by an assistant coach.
Yeah, I know I was thankful, being an Allman grad, that I got to cover some of those mid-90 teams that got to state. Well, and this is what I can tell people about, that I think Allman played at the last state tournament at the Assembly Hall, right?
Correct.
And played at the first ever state tournament at Peoria Carver Arena.
Right.
I was there for both of them, broadcasting that as a class of 1985 Allman grad. But people will always refer to you as former Allman coach Larry Schulte. That was your home. You're a graduate there, right?
Correct.
Grew up in East Moline.
Yep.
Grew up in near, I think, the same neighborhood as my father and the Taylor family on the mean streets of East Moline.
A couple blocks apart.
And then the great Gary Winicky grew up in that neighborhood, who was the Hall of Fame track coach at the University of Illinois, right?
Correct.
And when people – see, this is this is me talking as an Allman grad now, that some people, how they, infer what Allman represents – and they're like, well, you went to the rich kid school? And I'm like, well, no, it's not a rich kid school. It's a working class I refer to it as a working class neighborhood school. And basically, that's where the school's at, in a working class neighborhood. Sure, there are some outliers where there's some very wealthy kids that go to that school. But most of them in my era were working class kids, where their dads were working at, or moms and dads were working at Farm Mall or John Deere Harvester Works or International Harvester like my father. And that's, I assume, where you came from when you went to Allman.
Up until 1987, until the recession, until Farmall went by the wayside, Almond's enrollment was still hovering around the 900 to 1,000. But when I was there in 1957 through 61, our enrollment was about 1,300 to 1,400. And, you know, currently their enrollment is 430. And, yeah, the student population has declined. But, you know, the kids that go there now do come from a little more affluent families than when we were there, because it was definitely blue collar. So many of our kids at that time came from the west side of Rock Island, and many of them lived in public housing. And we had a lot of kids from East Moline that also, you know, myself, and we came from very modest backgrounds.
Yeah, and but that was, I assume, the highlight of your career in those mid-90s, and you're talking Rod Patrick, Pat Voss. I remember him. What a great play. He never came off the floor. I know he was a soccer kid, and some of those. Brian Trapkus played.
Right.
Those were some exciting times for the Pioneers, that's for sure.
Yeah, we those three kids, and we had a lot of kids that were just really dedicated basketball players. You know, I, as an athletic director, I love multiple sport kids, and Voss was a multi-sport kid, but we had some kids that devoted just entirely their time and efforts to basketball. And, that group of kids, led by Voss, you had to ask them to leave the gym because they never wanted to leave.
You could tell that by their body language on the floor. And then Ryan Kelly played with that group.
Correct.
Former Sherrard coach.
Right.
Yeah. So when you look back then at, you know, we've talked about this before with Alleman and the IHSA and classification, public school, private school. You know, my debate with the classification issue is basically my argument will always be football. I think I'm not so concerned about classification for other sports. I want to talk about four-class basketball, though, too, because I know you can't be a big fan of that. But I like the football enrollment equation back about 10 years ago, basically when they treated all schools, basically you were classified on the average, basically what it equated to the average enrollment of your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
So, and to me, that like Aledo back in the day, I always thought benefited from playing in the Olympic Conference because they were small. They were the small school playing bigger schools, and they would always be the last team standing in the postseason because of it.
Right.
And because they play in 2A or whatever, 3A or 2A. And I think it benefited Alleman as well, where they'd play in a smaller classification. But then I too felt that, well, you know, Aledo has somewhat of an unfair advantage because they're playing, and I'm speaking on a public school standpoint, they get to play in a smaller classification compared to some of these other schools. So averaging the enrollment, and you play the average enrollment of your opponent, that's the classification you play in the postseason in football.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair, do you think, or not?
Yeah, that was probably the fairest system that we had. I certainly don't like what they've done with the multiplier and those
well,
kind
and
of
I,
things.
Well, and I think nobody is a definite fan of the success factor. I'm not. I mean, because you're punishing the parochial school that wins, but you don't give them a failure factor if they continually lose and haven't won whatever, where they can drop down to 1A. What do you think the answer? Do you think there'll ever be an answer for that classification issue?
I don't know. It takes a greater mind than myself. That when I was involved in it at Alm was when the multiplier got put on, and I went to Springfield and testified about that situation because I thought it was totally unfair. And I, when they came up with 1.65 and Alleman just happened to be at that point, I was wondering who was getting punished. But
So four class basketball, well, basically four class volleyball, four class baseball, and softball. Yay or nay?
Well, I think, you know, what the IHSA did by creating four-class basketball, you kind of killed the goose that laid the golden egg. You know, as you mentioned earlier, we played in the last state tournament at Champaign, a full house at Champaign. We played in the first time they moved to Peoria, a full house for every session. And it was two-class. And I love the two class because at that time it gave some coaches that small school coaches that never would have got recognition, you know, like Ed Butkovich at Mount Pulaski and Ron Felling at Lawrenceville and guys like that. You know, they got recognition as much as any of the large school coaches did. And I'm not saying if you win the small school class in a four-class system, that's a big, obviously, deal that kids are going to have those memories for life. But believe me, if you won it in the small school class when there were only two classes, it was important. Now, and by going to the four-class system, you know, in some classes, there's predominantly Chicago area schools, they don't bring attendance anymore. And so you rattle around in Peoria, and they've lost the casual basketball fan. You know, probably the schools that are participating, their fans come, but you don't get the casual fans, and those are the fans that used to pack the place at Champaign and at Peoria when it was a two-class system.
And I think, too, you know, I think two-class basketball has something to do with it, too. But I think, too, the thing that is hurting high school basketball now. I still go to the four class every year because I just like good basketball. I mean, I like to see the big school classes, the inner city Chicago kids that are highly recruited. But I really think the thing that is hurting too is how big the college basketball conference tournaments have become for the casual basketball fans likes to stay home and watch those. Those basically parallel maybe I think the 1A, 2A weekend.
Right.
And then I think the 3A, 4A weekend, you're getting into the, you know, the first round of the NCAA tournament, which has become such big viewing audience for the high school, for the casual basketball fan on that Friday and Saturday. And I think that is shaking high school basketball a little bit too.
Oh, there's no question. I'm a basketball junkie. I watch every college game in the country, I think. And I admit it's a lot more comfortable to sit in your recliner than it is to go sit in bleachers when you get to be my age.
Yeah. All right, talking with Larry Schulte this morning. Got to start way back in 1965 at Sherrard High School. We'll continue our conversation right after this. You're listening to the WRMJ Sportsline on the Saturday
morning. As a small business owner, you know that every year running a business brings new challenges and opportunities. The success of
now with dorms and with scholarships, I never would have left there, and we'd be winning all the time, and Darren should be winning all the time. But and when I did coach at Blackhawk, we had a lot of area kids. I coached Brian Kennedy from Riverdale. I had Mark Archer, Mike Butcher from Aledo, and Mike Steele, Dennis Weber from Rockridge. So we were.